Alberto, would you like to start?
I was listening to the one tape from India, maybe 2000. You said, it was like a joke, but I like it. You said, I came here to pay respect to a dastrag, referring to Sariputta. And at first I thought I couldn't really understand the meaning. Then I look it up, and of course Sariputta was compared himself to a dastrag. Then I realized that paying respect to a dastrag meant more than paying respect to than just someone who didn't care about anything in the world. So I thought maybe the dastrag is not so easy to be a dastrag at all. Maybe Sariputta can be a dastrag, but not me for sure. It's impossible for ordinary Puttajana to be like Sariputta.
Yeah, and how to be dastrag? Is there any way?
By understanding.
Only.
It's not only understanding, it seems there has to be a lot of metta also.
But if there is still I am or I have metta, yes. Can that be dastrag?
But what I'm saying is not only understanding, there must be metta also.
And also kusala.
Can one say the main factor in being like a dastrag is the giving up of the idea of self, because while there's an idea of self and while there is mana, conceit as well, then these are the obstacles, the hindrances to being like a dastrag, finding oneself so important.
And actually, does one really want to be a dastrag? I just want to.
Just like the idea or the fantasy.
And what is the benefit of being a dastrag?
Well, I think the idea is not literally being a dastrag, but rather giving up the sense of self-importance, because a dastrag is very unimportant and very nondescript. So they're saying that the idea is giving up the idea that there's any importance to what we think of as a self.
As long as once you have the idea of a self, that cannot be dastrag.
That's right. That's true. That's very true. Yeah.
So your question, what's the answer? You said, what's the...
How to be...
No, you said...
What's the benefit?
What's the benefit?
Okay.
I...
To have understanding that there is no self from the beginning to the end. From not understanding and begin to understand until one becomes arahata or sotapanna.
So it's not so much about wanting to become a dastrag. It's about understanding, mm-hmm. and the dastrag will arise by itself.
Yeah. But then again, not everyone was a dastrag. Not all Aryans. We are talking particularly about. Sorry,
as long as there's still kilesa, can there be dastrag?
No.
Because one should have akusala. So dastrag is not akusala.
And anybody without kilesa is a dastrag?
I think that it has to be understood. How long?
How long?
Forever or just from time to time?
Oh, I see. So you can be a dastrag only certain times, special
only
times.
As long as there is still kilesa.
But for the arahat, any time, because no kilesa, no clinging to self at all, no conceit.
So he says that's right all the time.
All the time. Yeah. But for us, just moments of understanding. It's like a dastrag. And the expression that Alberto said he heard was about how you were there to pay respect to the dastrag. What do you mean by pay respect to the dastrag?
Don't you pay respect to the Buddha?
Pay respect to those who are like the dastrag, yes.
But I thought it meant that this particular place was...
Okay, I'm not sure.
Or maybe somewhere that associated with Sariputta.
And what about the other arhatas?
He's famous for being a dustrag. So I think the question is, what was special about him?
All arhatas have no kileta.
Sariputta.
Not just Sariputta, who didn't have kilesa at all.
It's not about the place, and the only reason we mention Sariputta is because the sutta about being like the dust rag that anyone can trample on and so on is one that Sariputta gave, and he talked about it, that's all, but it could be any arahat talking about it.
So being without kilesas is a synonym for dust rag?
Idea that like a dust rag, people step on you, bother you, annoy you, whatever they do, it's not going to spoil your sense of the equanimity.
Yeah.
So that's
sometimes when I think about enlightenment, I think that it's something that I want to get, but when I think about a dust rag, I'm not very sure.
When we have the idea we would like to become enlightened, yeah, or we would like to be without kilesa, then no dust rag at those moments, because it's all about I again.
And when we think about becoming a nobody, not so sure again.
I think for the word pachaturi or dust rag, it's like it shows the difference between an arahata. It shows the difference, large difference between a arahata and a puttajanas.
Hung and Huan were saying that their number one question is because of some different ideas in the group, and a topic that they discussed recently in Holland was about monks. So would you like to introduce it, Hung?
You may know that we had a short discussion with Kunina last week at her house and about the monkhood life, and there are a lot of different ideas about the monkhood life. And one person in our group, he said that he pay respect for all monk, even the monk do it a wrong way, but he still pay respect to the monk. But the other person says that if he knows the monk did wrongly, so he cannot pay respect to that monk. So, I mean that one action from the monk could be conditioned to any kusala or akusala thinking, akusala consideration about that. So can you elaborate more about what is the right consideration?
Do you know who's the monk in Dhamma Vinaya? Or you don't mind whether that monk doesn't follow the Vinaya at all and no understanding?
Who can who knows the danger of the...
Otherwise, you pay respect to everyone, not just the monk who's not in Vinaya. Would you? What's wrong if we don't pay respect to such a monk who's not according to Vinaya? Nothing wrong. Otherwise, that monk would think that he is worthy to receive such respect, and he will never follow the Vinaya more and more, again and again.
I think there are two points. One point is that the true or deep meaning of bhikkhu is the one who sees the danger in samsara. Yes. So anyone here can be bhikkhu in this sense because of seeing the value of developing understanding. And when we talk about paying respect to the Sangha, the Buddha, the Dharma and the Sangha, actually it's paying respect to those who have followed the teachings, especially the Aryans who have become enlightened and shared the teachings, and it is because of their wisdom that we're able to hear the Dharma today. And the other point is that what I've always learnt from Ajahn is that rather than thinking of individual monks and how much kalesa they have and whether they follow the Vinaya, which will lead to a lot of disturbance and maybe, as she just mentioned, they're not worthy of paying respect. But like the first friend said, actually, when one pays respect to the order of monks, one doesn't think of the individuals. One pays respect to the order as a whole. So when it's Sanghadana, it is to the order of monks, to those who have shared the Dharma and followed the Vinaya. So no need to think about the individual. So even if one is paying respect at a temple to a monk who may or may not have good Vinaya, actually in one's mind one is paying respect to the order as a whole. So I think of anyone who is following and understanding the teachings, and if I'm thinking about those who are ordained, I think about the order as a whole that follows the Vinaya. No need to think about the problems with individuals, because otherwise it just leads to akusala cittas. Yes.
Good, Sarah. So by your explanation, it says that the two people are actually recollecting different objects. The two people are recollecting the different objects. One is paying respect to the Sangha, but one actually understand the actions from that is a result of a kusala citta, and an action that is a result from action from a akusala citta. So if it's panya will also see rightly whether it's from an kusala or akusala. So wouldn't it be better, as Thanachan said, to know akusala for akusala and kusala for kusala, just precisely what it is? I think Kunsara's make a good point there, is that it depends on what object do the person have when they were paying respect.
And in the end, it comes back to our own citta at that moment, because if we're in front of the monk who is not behaving properly and there's dosa, there's no paying respect to any meaning of bhikkhu at that moment. So this is why I think better to think of the order as a whole, or think of anyone who has followed the teachings with kusala jitas.
Kunsara, so what do you think is a way? So if we might not be able to show our contempt or anything, and also any arising dhammas will be by anatta, but if we see a monk that does not behave correctly, how do you think we can help such a person? Or how do you think we can help him reflect? Do we talk Dhamma to them, or do we ask them questions? Or what do you think is a skillful thing to do?
It depends on whether they have any interest to hear. Like when we're in Vietnam, some monks attend, and from our part, we will only behave appropriately, like we wouldn't give them money and we wouldn't have them seating in the wrong place, so we will do our best. And if they're interested to listen to Dharma, then we will explain about the Dharma. So it just depends on the occasion and whether there's an opportunity to help, because in the long run, unless they have an interest in understanding the teachings, their behavior won't change. So it has to come from the understanding.
And what will you do if you see a monk on the street?
I would not pay attention, Ajahn.
Would you like to help him?
To help him?
Like just said.
But I think it's very hard to help somebody who, first of all, you don't know. And you don't, yeah. And they need to have I think you can help somebody who asks you for help, but they're not asking you for help. I think is counterproductive. It's the it's not a good idea.
I think the only way to help anyone is to understand and study by oneself, and then if there's an opportunity, like Khun Sarah said, we share what we understand. But it's only through understanding that we can help anyone. So we just need to understand both the study and genuinely study both the Dhamma and the Vinaya, so that if there's an occasion that we can help anyone through conversation, it's possible.
And not just that man, anyone.
And it's the same with anyone. There's an opportunity, but it depends on their interest, whether they would like to hear, if someone, even a lay person or even one's family member, if they don't want to hear or not interested, then that's their life. There are different accumulations.
The question is, you know, because when I have listened to Thanachan Apini, since the beginning that Ajahn teach about this Dhamma, and I just learned and I had a very big surprise what I have found in the monks, what they taught at, in fact, up to now. You know, it's nothing at all. Well, I cannot say at all. But what they try to tell us up to now is most of them, I can say that I couldn't say even 90% or 99%. It's wrong, you know. It's so simple, you know. Just try to take the Buddha teaching and the way that just to practice. And I was so surprised and I was so disappointed, you know. And yes, I can say, and now when we talk about it, Kusun and Akusology. And even when I saw that, I realized that in my mind. And it's very difficult to analyze myself whether it's mana or not.
Expectation. Expectation and disappointment. That's
yes.
Because and we think it should be like this, but
why they're so, it's completely different from what Ajahn taught now with follow the way of the Buddha, try to explain to us of anicchang, dukkhang, anatta, and almost nobody talked about it or emphasized that point.
Different cheetahs, different moments.
Well, exactly.
And it comes back to one's own cheetahs at that time. Yeah. Is there any understanding or compassion, or is there annoyance and disturbance because they say the wrong things? So different cheetahs.
And is it necessary to know the exact nature of the mental state? Because that seems to be, in a sense, kind of selecting something that one wants to know about.
Probably they didn't know either, or they didn't know how to tell us to teach us. Probably that what we try to forget about it. And anyway, up to now, I try to concentrate in the way that I think it was right. That's all, so that I can avoid the akusalochita.
I think it's natural to react in the way you describe when one hears someone explaining the Dhamma wrongly, or what we think is wrongly. That is because one still has accumulated unwholesome tendencies. Otherwise, one wouldn't feel the need to, as it were, judge or compare what is being spoken by someone else to what we understand ourselves. But it's a natural accumulated tendency, so nothing can be done about it.
If we concentrate or try to avoid unwholesomeness, what kind of cheetah is that?
Exactly, exactly.
It's the self again, not wanting to react like that, yes. Not wanting to be disturbed. Yes. It's not the understanding of Dhamma as anatta.
So now then we have two things. One, the monks behaving in accordance to Vinaya, and one,
having right understanding. So now there's a situation where a monk may be able to follow the Vinaya with self. And that's also not right, isn't it?
So in order to be a monk, it's just follow the Vinaya. But there must be the understanding and understand one's own accumulation, whether one would study in the as not monk or as monk.
Yeah, there is very definitely misunderstanding about the Vinaya among the monks, because they come up with interpretations in order to, for instance, give you an example. The Vinaya says don't handle money, but they say, oh, okay, I can handle a credit card because it's not real money, but it represents money. But they interpret it so that they can handle a credit card. Okay, so this is the problem, and it boils down to, as Ajahn says, total lack of understanding of the rules, of the Vinaya rules, and so this is what's happening all the time.
And Hung, you said that you like to hear more about Ajahn's comment that here is a temple. Yes. So, would you say?
I like your comment.
The comment that Ajahn said the other day at the end of the talk, Ajahn told me, so, okay, so you're not going to a meditation center anymore. And I asked Ajahn, is this a meditation center? And Ajahn said, no, this is like a what, but without monks. only with people who, with people who see the danger of samsara.
But also only momentarily, right, Ajahn? Because we definitely don't have the accumulations to live in the actual what and follow the Vinaya. We're lay people who can at best keep the five precepts. So maybe the reference to what is only when there's panya and not otherwise.
We don't have to take it too seriously, but we can think of it as our temple.
I think what Kun Sara is trying to put in here is that whenever there's understanding of dhammas, at that moment there's already a kusala mind with panya, so there's no need of having to go anywhere, but at that place is already a place of practice.
That's the
word. That's a suitable place.
Anywhere where it's there's understanding. And Alberto had another question, which I think ties in with this, about the Buddha and paying respect to the Buddha. And Ajahn asked him a question before. Maybe you can repeat the question she asked you before.
I remember in Poland you asked what Buddham Saranam Gacchami could be said in English, and we all said, "I go for refuge to the Buddha." And then I've looked up a bit the commentary, and it has much deeper meaning to the word, both refuge and Gacchami. So it says that The refugees can be Lokuttara. There is a Lokuttara refuge and there is a Lokiya refuge. They both need panya. Can you explain a bit about refuge and going for refuge?
So what it's meant by having the Buddha as refuge?
Having understood what the Buddha taught.
It does mean that you don't understand the teachings and you pay respect to the Buddha and has him as refuge at all.
What he said that you couldn't catch, Betty, was that he was in the commentary when it talks about refuge, it refers to Lokuttara, refuge at moments of enlightenment. At those moments, there is a direct realization of nibbana,
And it also talks about lokiya, mundane refuge. So at moments of insight, at moments of understanding, at those moments, there is refuge in the Buddha because of that understanding. I think that was the point, was it, Alberto?
When there is the understanding of the teachings, it's not because having Buddha as refuge, otherwise we don't have any understanding at all.
Is that also the refuge of the Dhamma rather than the Buddha? And is there a difference?
Because who is the Buddha? Without understanding, that person cannot be the enlightenment. So it means that you would like to follow his path because nobody can show you that path at all.
And how are we to understand the refuge in the Sangha?
Sangha here means the enlightened person, it. Lokutra citta. No matter monk or not monk.
So in the context of the three refuges, the Buddha, the Dhamma and the Sangha, we know that the Dhamma, when there's understanding of the Dhamma, there's seeing the value of Dhamma and there's appreciation of the enlightenment of the Buddha who taught the Dhamma. And then in that context, what does Sangha mean? It means, as you say, the enlightened. So
those who have followed the path, those who have become enlightened, who have understood the teachings.
Isn't it enough just the Buddha and the Dhamma?
What about those who have followed the teachings and become enlightened through their wisdom? How would we hear the teachings now if it was not through the Sangha, through those who had become enlightened following the teachings and shared it and passed it down?
Also another aspect in Sukhim is that without the Sangha, the Buddha cannot be a perfectly enlightened Buddha. He's arise in this world to show the Dhamma, and his Dhamma leads people across to the far shore. It's because of the existence of the Sangha that the free germs is complete. This path is possible, and it's only through understanding. That's, I think, is another aspect of that.
I think it can be also because once you become Arahant, you have to be a monk, you have to join the Sangha to keep on.
But this here means Arya Sangha.
Yeah, I'm saying that. What's what I'm saying? At the time of the Buddha, when they were Arahants, after becoming Arahants, they had to join the Sangha to keep on being alive. Otherwise, they wouldn't. Might be so the
See, I'm not questioning the consequence of the Buddha having come and taught the Dhamma. There must be Sangha, but I'm just asking what our attitude towards the Sangha, you know.
Because once you become enlightened, you need the Sangha.
I understand what Sarah just said. She said, without the Sangha, we wouldn't have the teachings now.
I think also, it's also a different. You are not the same as you were before enlightenment. So, Sangha means the community of Aryans, and it's needed for to become Arahant.
And paying respect to the great wisdom of those who were able to listen and understand the teachings, like we were talking about the enlightenment of Sariputta and the other disciples who were able to understand, who had such great wisdom and understanding, and through that great wisdom and understanding we're able to benefit.
And we're talking about the three gems, right? So those three are...
Can you share with us normally how when you think of the Sangha and when you think of the refuge of the Sangha, how do you What kind of recollections that occur for you?
Three things. Not only one.
Letting people recollect according to their understanding. And that's as much as the recollection can be. To the extent one understands and appreciates the Dhamma, that is going to be the basis of the recollection. And every person will be different according to their way of thinking and considering.
For me, I think one who has the Buddha, the Dhamma, and the Sangha as their refuge has to be sincere to study his teaching. Because if they say just puttang saranang kacchami or respect to the Buddha without studying the Buddha's teaching, I think is not traya sarana.
Just praying to Buddha or repeating and chanting in Pali, it's quite meaningless if there's no understanding.
Yes, because some people pray respect to the Buddha for I want to be a billionaire or I want something from that.
But true respect only comes from studying and understanding the Dhamma. That's true respect, right, Dhamma-chan?
I wonder if we're thinking here of paying respect in terms of some kind of recitation. Respect is momentary, I think, as and when understanding arises, naturally. It can be at any time. But if it's done as a formal recitation, say at a particular time of the day, then this is quite a different thing.
So I think we can conclude that taking refuge is not about just by saying the words or wanting to do something. So it must be through understanding that one takes refuge.
Nothing to do with the circumstances or appearance, in other words.
And why Lokuttara is distinguished from Lokiya? Because once you are Sotapanna, then it's firm.
And so what do you think, John, about when like having certain times a day when you will read a book of Dhamma or you would listen to the Dhamma, like schedule yourself, like at 5 o'clock every day I will read one chapter or something like that?
Depends on the thinking behind it and the expectations, if any. There's nothing wrong with having one's day ordered to make sure that there's a little bit of time for everything in principle. So we can't say for sure.
Like discussion at 2 o'clock, 5 o'clock every day, we do the editing of recordings, or so sometimes it's convenient to have an arrangement. Just depends on the motive.
And is that not Dhamma? Is it not Dhamma?
Is it not Dhamma?
Being like that.
Well, again, it depends on the
understanding.
On the understanding, yes.
If you think that it has to be done with the idea of self, it's not right understanding.
For example, if one had the idea that the more time one spent reading the Dhamma, then the more understanding there was going to be, that would be the wrong kind of thinking, wouldn't it?
And talking about special times and places, there was some discussion, I think, amongst some of the Vietnamese friends about meditation and chanting, and some like to go to special places, even some who have listened to us for quite a long time and seem to have quite good interest, but they still like to go to, I think you said, a comfortable place where they have a practice and good food. Would you say a little more?
Yes, many of our friends prefer to go to the special place like a very nice people with a good food, and they have a good time with them, and such kind of a meditation center. So I know what's motivation for them to go to that place.
Is that right? Is that right?
Is it right to us? Right to go?
Mm-hmm. When I start listening to Thanachan, at first, I cannot. There's just some certain accumulations that even me myself, I still have those tendencies. But the more I listen to the correct words, the more I understand that Dhamma cannot be studied with our idea of self. We cannot force some kind of practice without the conditions. So the more I listen, the more firm we become in the understanding, and we understand that if the moment of understanding arises, there's no stopping. There's no need to go to a different place. It can happen right here, provided if there's conditions. So the more I listen, the more firmer become. It's we can know for oneself that we don't need to go to any other place. But the place where there's listening and there's consideration of the Dhamma, there's already practice, but not by the idea of self, but by conditions, and because Dhamma is Dhamma. And I think it's only way for those that been to meditation centers before, and then by studying and by understanding that they slowly let go, not by themselves, but let go through understanding of not needing to go anywhere and just understanding it as it is.
I think this also relates to the idea of people say they like to, they want to be alone or go to some place where they can be alone. And so we discussed this, I think, last week, and we talked about this idea of what does it really mean to be alone? It basically means to be where not alone literally, but alone in the sense that the contemplation is occurring, and perhaps if the conditions are right, understanding is arising, then that is aloneness, no matter where you physically are.
Can Hun say why she thinks it's right to go to meditation center?
I think no.
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 Oh, okay.
Yes. But almost my friends, practice meditation and chanting. Yes. So I wonder, I want to share them about listening Dhamma, but I cannot. yes, I cannot. Sometimes I invite them listening Dhamma, but they not understand, and they said that it's not Dhamma. It's not Dhamma. So I cannot do that. Yes.
Because the attachment to their
yes.
idea or their idea of practice as Dhamma is so strong that they don't wish to hear another idea.
Yeah.
Or even like some friends you mentioned who may have listened quite a long time, but they're still so much attachment to being in the center with sitting quietly and following certain rules or being with other people, living like that. So even if they have some idea that maybe it's not right, but still there's attachment to that way because it's their habit. So all one can do is talk about Dhammas, like seeing now. Seeing anywhere, anytime, no need to be in a special place. And I think, Hung, you said that you found it interesting the other day when we were talking about
the different kinds of Viveka seclusion, and you wish to hear more
about. Yes, I'd like to hear more about the Viveka. What reality of the Viveka?
No desire, no attachment, no kilesa.
Okay. It means that it's sati with panya?
At moment when there's no akusala, do we have to know what's there? Sati or something else?
Not now.
Not now.
If there's no akusala, that's kusala, sati must be there.
So if for the friends who go to the meditation center with attachment because they like it and they sit quietly focusing on breath or whatever, they think this is solitude or seclusion or viveka, but actually it's attachment and wrong understanding, no viveka at all at those moments. Even though they're physically alone, viveka cannot be with attachment.
And there's still an idea of selecting particular objects for study or for awareness, because obviously the difference between daily life and being in a meditation center is one is devoting a period of time to having awareness, and that means, okay, now it's time for awareness practice, so one is selecting the object at that time.
I usually offering for the monk and the student, yogis.
She offered food to the monk
and the yogis. So everybody said that you are attachment and loba. So I think. This is kusala. Offering is kusala, and I do that continuously. But sometimes I think they say that right. Sometimes I think it's kusala. I continue. I think it's this accumulate. Are you comment this?
Would you like to think or listen to the teachings?
Listening. Yes.
Could you just explain what Boone was saying about when she gives off, makes offering to the monks?
She often she has an accumulation to offering the food to the monks. And yogis in the meditation center. So it's first time I'm not agree with her, because maybe meditation center is not right place to get more understanding about the Dhamma, about the teaching. But she preferred to go, and she liked to offer in the foods. But some of our friends not agree with her doing. But now, as more understanding the Dhamma, we understand that her accumulation is the kusala, this. But we don't know exactly.
So your friends wanted to discourage her from going to the meditation center to offer food?
It may be kusala when she's offering the food, and this is out of kindness. But when there's more understanding, then I think no interest to go to that center. One will offer the food to in other ways, or have the kusala in other ways, because one won't be inclined to go. But it doesn't mean there can't be kusala.
But you do appreciate that your friends who are trying to discourage you from giving are actually trying to point out to you what kusala is really is, right? So if you end up giving with attachment, then that's not giving. So actually they're just trying to help you.
I think that they're just pointing out that it's better not to go to the meditation center. That's the point. It's not, they're not saying that giving, they're not talking about whether the giving is with moments of attachment, but they're just saying better just stay away because there's so much wrong view and wrong practice, so why be in the environment where one's listening to it? And otherwise one thinks one has no interest, one is just interested in understanding Dharma in daily life, but then why go there?
When I listen a lot to Thanachan, among the words that I first attracted my mind, my chitta very much, is that we were so alone, in fact, in reality, that we so alone, and I found that profoundly that it's true and it's real, it's a reality. And then when we talked about practice, among the other words again, Thanachan mentioned right at the moment when we breathe in and out, it means that our life is just short like that. So in fact, we can practice each moment, even more than a moment, because everything, you know, arises and then it's gone rapidly. I think as long as you have sati comes to you after listening, and I think that's the right way. To go to practice somewhere is probably just a condition to avoid, I mean, to have a rest, your mind, your body, for example. But the real practice, in French we call ontekiyome, it means, if we could say that word. In fact, just right at the moment, I think that it's so important. And you in the morning, you drive, of course, is sati will not come every time, but when you touch, but it's too late anyway. When you feel it, it's gone already.
The point is that going to the meditation center, it's not a rest. If it was just a rest, like going to the beach or the forest, no problem,
yeah,
have
fine.
A rest.
Yes.
The point is that it's the place or the purpose of going is to follow the wrong path, to develop wrong understanding. The other day there was a Thai gentleman who came to visit Ajahn, and I couldn't understand because it was in Thai, but Roti kindly told me bits that were going on. And at the beginning, I think he was talking about his breath, his practice, being aware of breath. And from what Roti explained to me, Ajahn was just saying, it's the idea of self at those moments, because it's something. Is that what was said?
But I think we are not alone, because
Ajahn said that if he was seeing breath, there was a self there.
If I can venture a guess, he probably didn't quite understand how that was the idea of self. That's probably what he didn't understand.
Can we say that anyone who goes to meditation center understands the teaching? Not at all.
No. Actually, they are destroying the teaching. So to offer things to people in a meditation center means to offer things to people who are destroying the Buddha's teaching.
And if one thinks, well, one's just going and it's just kusala, but why go? Why go to the place of wrong view and the place that's destroying the teachers? What do you think, Hoon? Do you?
But I think Hoon said that she had friends there, right? She goes to meet some friends also.
She has friends in at home, she has friends in the city, she has friends in many places, she has many, many friends. So why go to see the friends that are destroying the teachings? Yes. Why help those friends in particular? And those monks in particular? Yes. Loba, yes. Loba and maybe some old habit because maybe even though one knows it's not right, but still there is that behavior that's motivated by that wrong view that's been accumulated in the past, so one still likes to do it. Like our friend who said he listens and he knows it's not necessary, but it's still his habit to sit cross-legged and focus on the breath and those lingering habits from one's past wrong view, very tenacious.
Right, I think we can tie this very nicely to the dust rag, because dust rag has no benefit at all, but just to think of going to do something for what benefit, that's already wrong understanding.
It's for who? For oneself, because one would like to be the person who is calmer or the person who has better concentration. So actually, it's for me, it's not the understanding with detachment of whatever is conditioned, which is the dust rag, not minding what happens to one, not thinking of oneself.
Could we say people who go to do meditation is doing with tanha mana entity?
Yes. Doing what?
People who go for meditation, they because of the tanha mana entity. My sister is going in October for the whole month down south.
I also
come here to the foundation with tanha mana and ditti, but I find that what we discuss here gives me an opportunity to become aware a little bit about tanha
expectation. Also, tanha and mana and titi.
Yes. Thinking if one thinks when one's here there will be understanding, or if one would like to know exactly how Ajahn thinks about the Sangha so one can do the same. Actually, clinging can come in any time.
Yes. What I think what you're going to say is that in a meditation center there's no way that you can develop any understanding, right?
No, what I'm saying is that, you could put it that way, but what I'm saying is that you're saying you come here with tanha, mana, and ditti, with the understanding that you're still a putujana, you still have those kilesas. So it can arise anytime. Whereas the difference is, when you go to a meditation center, you don't know that. You don't see that. You actually follow tanha, mana, and titi, believing that it's taking you to
the wrong path is taken for the right path.
I think the worst thing of going samnak padibat is ignore the Buddha's teaching. And many people try to say to anyone who interested in Buddhism, you don't need to study the Buddha's teaching at all. Just practice. I think it's the worst.
That's some kind of meditation center, but there are other kinds of meditation centers where they study a lot of Abhidhamma and a lot of Pachaya and everything.
But without still right understanding.
Yes, because it's very hard to understand.
Because I think if you have right understanding in Abhidhamma, you don't go anywhere. But you have right understanding to understand whatever appears right now. And I would like to talk about being alone. I think we are not alone because we are always with Lopa until Arahat. Yes.
What about at moments of understanding? At moments of understanding, is there seclusion? Is there aloneness? Like now, as Roti said, there's a lot of attachment when we calm, a lot of ignorance, but moments of understanding. So is there viveka at seclusion at moments of understanding?
Yes, at that moment. If you have right standing.
But for those moments, yes.
Yes.
And the point about the viveka that you asked about before was what we were discussing before. So any moments of understanding of reality, like now there may be moments of understanding amongst all the lobha and ignorance. So at those moments, it is viveka, it is seclusion of the citta viveka. And the kaya viveka that we were discussing is, in addition to citta viveka, for those who live alone in a quiet place, like Mahakasapa, with right understanding, in addition to citta viveka, there is kaya viveka. But before the Buddha's time, people just thought living quietly in the forest or being in the cave was viveka. That's not viveka, because it has to refer to the citta. It has to refer to the citta that is free from kalesa, the citta at that moment with understanding. So if we go and rest for an hour on our own without people around and there's no understanding, it's not kaya viveka. But if while being alone at that time there is understanding, it is kaya viveka as well as citta viveka. And then the third one refers to moments of insight and enlightenment, upadhi viveka.
Yeah, also to answer Roti when saying that you came first here with Akusala. But I remember...
Not first.
All the, every day.
The yeah, these are the... I remember a time last Thursday saying how Akusala can condition Kusala by Pakatupanisepache. Do you remember that? And she was saying that maybe we come here by Akusala. But that can be a condition for Kusala. That's the only way by which Akusala can condition Kusala.
She even gave the example, if you go to the meditation center with wrong view and attachment, but it may be that even so, one is so determined to find the right way that somehow one reads the right book or hears the right point, so the akusala can be conditioned for kusala even there. Or there can be, even though one may go with some lurking wrong understanding, but it can be a condition for kusala when helping friends. So, yes, conditions very intricate.
This sounds like a long story.
Life is so long.
Whatever, you just explain, like, oh, you can come here with Akusala, and that can be a Pakatupanisepacha. But isn't Pakatupanisepacha also in
But we don't talk just about today. We also talk about eons and eons ago, too.
Another question of Roti's, to lead into it, is related to the fact that we say, like for those who go to the meditation center, it's wrong view of self. The point you wanted to bring up about how Jan said to you in a discussion in the hospital that actually everything was with self, but it's not quite clear because we know not every citta is with the wrong view of self.
Oh, yes. Yes, Ajahn was saying one day that everything we do it with self. Like right now, I feel that it's me who is talking, and I feel that it's me who is sitting. But at the same time, one day they explained that wrong view does not arise every moment.
Does not arise, but it's there.
But is there, right?
So when you just try to explain yourself, maybe it arose. But otherwise, if you would have just talked something else about some other topic, it may not be there.
But for example, sometimes, well, every day I'm doing
the things that I do in my daily life.
It's not always there.
But then there can be a moment when I say, oh, now I feel that it's me.
And then again, it has to only Olipanya knows, right?
There are conditions to have such moment. Otherwise, there cannot be such thinking.
Like, for example, I'm talking on the microphone, and then there can be a moment when I see, oh, I feel like it's me who is talking.
But it's still I.
Huh?
Yeah.
The I and is you don't feeling know. That it's me.
You think that sometimes you don't have the idea of I, but actually it's there.
Yes, I think that's right. So even when we're not doing something particular, there's always I versus the rest of the world. And there's that person and that person too. And there's that object.
And it's not just latent tendency. Lopa is there, unknown.
But the question is whether it's ditti or not. One needs to know a bit about the characteristic of ditti, because it's difficult to know when it's plain lopa, when it's ditti, perhaps. Unless one has a better understanding of the difference of the characteristics of the two, it can't be known. Asking the question as you did, it's not really possible for another person to give the answer.
Which question?
You were asking when I'm speaking on the microphone, it's me speaking.
Oh, I didn't ask. I didn't ask. It was not a question.
It was putting a circumstance or situation.
A circumstance that I might be speaking on the microphone, and then I realized that I have the feeling of being myself who's talking on the microphone.
It's not known when it's not sati. You just think.
It's thinking, yes. Well, but maybe the thinking is after.
Really? Now? No thinking?
Idea of I can even be with kusala citta. Doesn't have to be lobha. Idea of I or me or you or whatever can be with kusala citta too.
But do you know how many moments lobha mulicitta arises? So you just do anything without lobha?
Yeah, I think it's almost impossible.
Be, yeah.
Yes.
For, I think what's very valuable, and the one thing I think is valuable in coming here, is that even if we were to know just a little bit about an akusala that is there, it's better than to go somewhere and hoping for akusala citta to happen. So at least in midst of all of this akusala, I think there can be somewhere that starts to accept that we are actually in a total darkness, and it's just overwhelming.
Yeah, it's the low part even right now. So when again, please? When?
When, Ajahn?
It's low part.
Right now, Ajahn.
When?
Now.
More exact. Yeah.
What exactly?
Even just move, see.
Yes.
And even immediately after seeing, after hearing, if there's no sati, then it's akusala.
This is what is meant by all the time. It's like lobha is arising instantly after seeing. Yes. So ditti, by all the time, it's meant it's there in the background, the tendency is there, ready to condition ditti to arise any time. But it doesn't mean it's there at every moment, arising.
But lobha is basically arising every moment, right?
At moments of seeing and hearing is the lobha?
Yeah, no.
At moments of kusala is the lobha?
No.
No. So just at moments of akusala and moments of dosa is the lobha? So when we say all the time, it doesn't mean at every moment.
So I think I kind of understand the characteristic of lobha clearer than the characteristic of wrong view.
You cannot. Because it's you. Only sati can understand this moment is not self, because it's such and such reality.
And actually, it would seem that when Roti is saying, I think I can, at that moment it's already arisen and you don't know.
What has already arisen?
Wrong view.
Not necessarily.
Or lopa.
No.
Just lopa.
Maybe just lopa. Maybe just lopa.
It might just be a manner of, a manner of speaking. Manner of speaking. You can't tell what his Rodhisthita is at all.
Right, right. But it seems to me he's taking a little time considering between different moments and different experiences.
But what condition you're thinking?
Sorry, Ajahn.
What condition you're thinking?
My thinking? What conditions? Tanha, mana, and not all at the same time.
Can I bring up another reply from our Polish friend who has the drinking problem, who has listened to Ajahn?
I think that he always has problem because he don't understand reality.
And he read what you said the other day, and it was quite straight and quite direct, and I transcribed exactly, so it was like tough medicine. And he says he would like you and any of us to excuse any of his offensive or arrogant words from time to time, because when he's drunk, he can't help words that are said. Alcohol makes Mara speak, not him. So this is just his apology, first of all. And he understands what you were saying about meditation or sitting and analyzing dharmas as not being the right way. He just said it because he thought it might help cure his problems. But I know there's a lot of ditti in that. But he doesn't think ditti is his current problem, because before he studied dharma for a long time and there was less and less wrong view, like an idea of body and mind and intelligent mind. I used to know the path a bit since there was less wrong view and more opportunities for understanding and kusala. My problem now, for at least the last 3 or 4 years, is I forgot the Dharma. I don't understand anything, but I'm drinking far too much. That's why I asked you, Ajahn, because you're wise and I don't know what to do. Maybe you can help. What advice?
Not thinking about himself.
Usually,
but understanding the teachings of the Buddha. That's the only way.
That's for all of us.
The words of the Buddha for everyone.
I mean, for all of us, I think we can appreciate that the main obstacle, main hindrance to right understanding is the wrong understanding of self. So it's not drunkenness, but wrong view, which is the real enemy.
And the other day when you said to him, oh, no understanding at all, actually at most moments of life, for everyone, it's like that, no understanding at all, those moments of attachment and ditti and preoccupied with oneself, no understanding at all. So one has to come back to dharmas, yes. Otherwise it's like this person's problem and this, but actually it's dharmas just. And when we don't realize that when thinking about and talking about our problems, we think it's something useful, but actually it's all attachment, clinging to oneself.
But Ajahn, this is going to continue for a long time. So long as we are Putujanas, there will be doubt. There will be questions like what Lucas has put. I mean, when we have problems, then we want to fix the problem, and it's so much self.
And when you say to him, understand the teachings of the Buddha, you mean understand there are just dharmas, no this person, no that person, no I that so seems so important, just passing dharmas, each one is dukkha and not worth clinging to at all.
Because I thought that I read the emails a little bit, and I thought that he thinks that understanding Dhamma means to learn Pali, right? Wasn't that?
I think often people think that it means studying the text we were discussing about the meaning of Pariyatti. People think it means learning what is in the book, working out the number of cheetahs and cheetah seekers studying Pali, but this isn't what Ajahn means by understanding the teachings of the Buddha. Like you said before, it's now.
Does the person who set up their meditation center have no understanding of the words in Tipitaka? But just the words, not reality.
Yes, many Pali experts set up meditation centers. Many people who can memorize the Tipitaka in Pali, but it's just the book knowledge.
It means that he doesn't have understanding of what he said.
So, Ajahn, it's not they have right understanding, they have a lot of wrong understanding.
Mm-hmm.
But I think Lucas mentioned about Pali, didn't he? About studying Pali, right? Yeah.
Yeah, like
reading texts and studying Pali, both he mentioned.
Maybe you can keep him as another of us, like a Parami. Parami. You see, they know that Pali. That you understand Pali, Thana Parami, Sila Parami, and Nekama Parami. Just three of that. But he's still drinking. What is that? He talk about the panya, no panya, no understanding anyway.
If he understood what is there at that moment as not self, it's all right. Because no one can condition any moment to be kusala. So it depends on understanding only.
So not just bharma is dhamma, understanding what dhamma is. And Dhamma is now.
And it's like the point before that I mentioned, if one thinks just by concentrating and avoiding akusala or by learning about parami and then there will be no drinking, it's not right because one forgets about dhammas as being conditioned at those moments. So it depends on the accumulations, who knows, like now one may have studied and there may be understanding. Next moment one may be angry or anything can happen by conditions.
It is really difficult to get to that point, to arrive at that point.
To try to analyze and to catch that.
So
point.
It's not a matter of trying to analyze or catch, because that's the idea of self.
That is difficult.
Doing something, yes.
Yeah.
So at this
doing
moment,
to try.
Seeing this, hearing. So as soon as there's any idea of trying or doing, so if one thinks, oh, reflecting on the paramis and then no drinking, that's not understanding conditions at this very moment. So forget about trying, forget about doing anything to have less unwholesomeness, because it's all motivated by the idea of I can do self, and then it leads to great disappointment when it's not the way one would like it to be. It's not the detachment with understanding from what is conditioned, no matter it's strong akusala.
Exactly.
Like before when Ajahn said, even if she's angry, she doesn't mind. It's just conditioned dharma. Whatever arises, it's conditioned dharma. So even that moment when this strong attachment for alcohol is conditioned dharma. So this is why one has to be so very courageous to understand dharma. Otherwise, always self trying to do something, moving away from what is conditioned now.
So it's not so much as arriving any point, it's getting it right now. The first step has to be right, and when it's right, it's right.
Okay, yeah, I understand. Automatically,
you mean? Right is right. As soon as there's an idea of getting it right, it's I again, yeah. It's not just understanding what, like a loba now. It's not a matter of waiting till there's no loba. Even at this moment of loba, there can be understanding, but not by trying or thinking of getting it right. Just by understanding dhammas, that's all.
When you're when you talk about
the way of life of the monkhood, I question also myself what, in fact, in all monasteries in Thailand, whether they have the course, I mean, to teach or even to discuss among them. I wonder also. I mean, all the one who know how to interpret, how to explain the Dhamma properly to the followers, I really doubt. And most, from my experience in the upcountry anyway, even in Wat Pa, in the temple in the forest, or even in the wheel, when they studied about the Pali, of course, the school of Dhamma. Normally they study in general. Or I don't know, really, we don't know. We don't even know anything. I mean, as follower, as people who supposed to listen to the monk. When we saw the monk, we pay automatically the respect to them. But then, up to now, I wonder how.
The original purpose was to give up the supposedly what was considered the greatest attachments in life to family and so forth. Okay, that was the original purpose. However, and to get out of all of the vilesa that arises in society. But what they fail to realize is that they just created a whole new society for themselves, which is the same galesas as arising, the same everything the same as arises for us, arises for them. So so what it's become is a lot of what is called silabhata paramasa, meaning attention to ritual and just doing that.
Is there a duty, you know, the monks have when towards lay people when they give gifts that are in excess? What should the monk do or say?
The monk should study and follow the Vinaya. Mm-hmm.
So how does a lay person come to know that he's behaving wrongly to a monk?
That's why we try to let them know.
Well, mostly in the
to help
don't.
Them to understand.
The lay people should also study, right?
How many percent?
Yeah. I mean, to study what? How should they treat a monk? Yeah.
Yes. How many percent?
Oh no percent.
But an answer to that. But an answer to that question, I've asked my son this question and the same question. The monks generally feel that they're not allowed to say to a lay person who wishes to offer them something. Unless it's totally against the Vinaya, unless it's very clearly stated in the Vinaya, this is not something you should have. They're not going to tell you, this is inappropriate, I have too many Buddha images, I have too many robes, please don't give me any robes. They're not going to say it.
It is very clearly stated in the Vinaya what the requisites for the monk are. There's the robes.
Absolutely.
And the bowl and the sewing kit and the razor. And
But then,
so
you know.
It's very clear.
And robes. Anything, well, that's why I gave giving like the example of the robes.
And just the inner and how many robes. It's all very clearly the inner and outer.
Yes.
So they're not able to accept anything other than those.
Well, no, it doesn't say that, though.
So they just don't accept that they can just say, I have enough or something?
I think that
it's meant by enough.
Like, if they're allowed only three robes, and someone is giving them the fourth?
If they're no, they don't receive anything more than that.
The reason they don't,
if they're given money, they don't receive it.
Right, so they can, at that moment, inform the layperson that what they're doing.
Yeah, but they don't want to discourage. If the person has a genuine desire,
no, you can always.
A genuine dana is arising in the person's mind. He says,
so
"Oh, I'd love
to
give this to the monk."
Give
the
them
monk
the dhamma
is not
going to
say, "Sorry, I can't accept that."
No, give them the Dhamma at that time. Just explain to them the Dhamma.
It's like receiving money or anything else. According to Vinaya, they cannot receive. It's the same with excess robes or statues or computers or anything, they're not in a position to receive anything other than the basic requisites.
But Sukhin, if the monk didn't understand, how can they, you know, just give Dhamma?
Of course, that's what I'm...
Right? I mean, what Dhamma?
That's what they don't do. That's right. Why I'm asking, mm-hmm. if a good monk, how would he behave?
And to start with, they don't even know what Dhamma is.
I just would like to say about Bariyan, because people have misunderstand about studying Bariyan as studying Dhamma, but I don't think so. Because people, when they think about Bariyan, they think of studying the Buddha's teaching, but I don't think so, because studying Bariyan is about study the language, Bali language, like grammar, vocabularies, how to translate from Bali to Thai or Thai to Bali, just that. It doesn't mean you have right understanding in realities as the Buddha's teaching.
Right. But they also study, like, one of the most important teachers in Burma who have very lots of meditation centers. They are very knowledgeable of the Tipitaka and Abhidhamma and everything. Yes.
Oh yeah, they can quote text beautifully to you. You know, so this is what they do.
Ruin, are you interested in chanting? Because earlier someone mentioned chanting.
I don't think she meant she was interested.
No, but she talked about her friends, so I'm asking her. When people like your friends, when they are chanting, or even when monks are chanting in the temple, does it have to be with wrong understanding, or can it be with kusala, or what do you think?
Chanting is...
She thinks that chanting is a reminder us about the Buddha teaching.
What about if it is in Pali and you don't understand the words? Can it remind us of the Buddha's teachings?
No.
Or if it is reciting of a text, for example, from the Abhidhamma that you don't understand, can it remind you of the teachings? Like here, the monks at funerals, they recite the Abhidhamma, but if there's no understanding of the meaning, can it remind
one? She agreed. No.
So only if the teaching that one hears or reads or speaks out loud is in a language or in a way that is possible to understand, does it remind one of the teachings? If it's just reciting in another language or just reciting without even reflecting on the meaning, then I don't think it reminds one very much.
Yes.
It can just be another ritual.
Before Khun Kampan came to foundation, he has got the highest level of Bariyan. Like he can translate anything. But he said before he came to listen to Thanachan, he didn't understand anything about Dhamma. But right now he listened to Thanachan and studied Tipitaka for right understanding in the Buddha's teaching. So Bali language that he has studied is very useful for now.
So, do you understand English?
A little.
Do you understand Dhamma?
Not now.
Even the Thai people do not understand Dhamma, but they know Thai, and some know Bali.
Peter, before we started, you mentioned this morning in the Thai session that you were reading a sutta from the Therigata and you summarized it as saying, and I'm sure this was just a very simplistic summary of saying, do what you say, like as an example, if you say you're coming here to the discussion, then you come here to the discussion, and you mention that this is samapatipatti, or right understanding, but I don't see the connection. Would you explain what was meant?
I mean, when you have right understanding, it no self can do anything, but it's the function of right understanding, such as I see the benefit of listening of the Buddha's teaching, and I have said to you, I will come, and I came today. Yes, because of I have understanding, but it's still I. It's not right sammapatipatti like that, but it's the way to go to sammapatipatti, because it's barami.
Understanding the value of hearing and considering and discussing. Yes. Because sometimes we use some, think of example like, oh, I say I'm going to come, so I'm going to come, or I say I'm going to phone my mother, so I phone my mother. But I don't think these are just conventional ideas. Yes. That don't have anything to do with patipatti. Like you may say you're coming but not come because someone asks you to help with something else, but that doesn't mean less patipatti or more, or so it's just conventional. Yes, it just depends.
Yes.
Sarah, I have a question. Could we understand, I didn't hear the morning's talks, but could we understand it as an aspect of panya is satcha? Could we understand it in that way?
Well, to me, satcha, like what Nopadon was mentioning about the parami, so to me, satcha parami means being truthful to this moment with understanding. So, for example, if ditti is the reality, or wrong understanding, or dosa, for example, the truthfulness to understand what appears as it is, as dharma, not thinking of another reality, or kidding oneself that it's kusala when it's akusala. So being truthful at this moment, I don't think it has anything to do with, like the example, oh, I said I'm coming, so I'm going to come. This is just purely conventional idea of truthfulness.
Thank you. Would understanding also, and that's such a barami, leads to one also be to have truthfulness in other aspects of their lives? For example, saying the truth, not lying.
Yes.
So it's that understanding that leads towards...
Yes, definitely, and to like not taking intoxicants, because one really understands the danger and all kinds of kusala, but it doesn't mean that akusala will not arise, and who will never lie, only the sotapanna. So, of course, it leads to more kusala, but not by wishing or expectation or trying to put aside the unwholesomeness.
But also changing one's mind about what one is going to do doesn't necessarily involve any untruthfulness of any kind.
Like one may be on one's way to enter the room, and because, like Peter told me, he's coming, and then someone has an accident outside, so one goes to help them. So something more useful may, anything can happen by conditions. So it has to come back to this moment. Not the conventional situation, I think.
And Ajahn, it's not one or two or three baramis, it must be all.
Many. And okay. How do you know that you are truthful or not?
One year.
Knows what?
Knows the moment that...
That you are truthful or not.
Yeah.
To the teachings, because you say that all dharmas are anatta. So study until it's so true to you that no self, no one.
And when it's not true, know that it's not true.
And if you go to meditation center, is that truthful to the word all dharmas are anatta?
And it's also similar with adhitana parami, or resolution, like one may think conventionally, oh, I'm going to make a resolution every Saturday to go to the foundation, but it doesn't happen. But that has nothing to do with adhitana parami. Adhitana parami has to be at this moment, the determination, because of the understanding, the value of understanding.
And even that moment, can it be right understanding? Anything.
So, more concerned about doing the right thing is having right understanding.
Understanding about no self at all.
I think there is no pattern for satya parami, but it depends on that moment by conditions.
Even if one was coming here and one's friend said, let's go to the movie, and one goes out of lobha, but there can be such a parami even at that moment, truthful about the accumulation of lobha at that instant. There can be understanding then and there. So yes, any moment, any place, and that is the viveka at that moment of understanding, not the place or time.
But just getting back to Trin's point, I think the teachings do talk about being a person whose word can be relied upon, being truthful in that respect. So there's a particular situation to the ordinary changing of mind, and one may have even told other people what one's plan is, but if it's just given as an indication of one's present thinking and intention, then there's no untruthfulness involved in changing one's mind. But of course, if it's a matter of giving one's word about something, that's different.
Yes, thank you, Kunjunas. And my point is just that if it's understanding, it can lead to all other kusla actions. So, but I'm saying that even though someone could say that they determined to do this, and if they did do it, it doesn't mean that it's kusala. So, but it depends on just understanding or not understanding.
It may actually just reinforce the idea of self more.
But the thing is,
like when you say I'm going to do this and then you do it, like for example when you study the paramis, thinking that if you study the paramis you will stop drinking, it may actually happen, and so that may just reinforce the idea of self.
I think
another verse in like atta tipatai, atta atipatai, loka tipatai and tamma tipatai. When we talk, we have to realize what it is. We talk about atta or tamma or loka.
This means is one studying for oneself to gain something, to be a wise person, or is one studying for the benefit of the outer world and society, or is one studying just for the purpose of understanding Dhamma as it is? And this is the real kind of study, studying and understanding just for the sake of understanding, not for any benefit for oneself or for society, but just for the sake of understanding.
There's also studying a little bit of all, with a little bit of all those purposes, right? Right.
And do you know about? Sorry, I've forgotten your name.
Meow.
Do you know about Kanti Parami or patience?
Yes.
So Kanti Parami means no matter what is conditioned at this moment, there can be patience. So even if it's strong akusala or no concentration as one would like it, no matter what arises, it's conditioned. And when there's understanding, there is patience with it. So the development of understanding needs a lot of satya parami and a lot of kanti parami, a lot of patience to be patient, whatever it is, as dhamma, not self.
But I think the person who have strong right understanding always do what they said by understanding, not by self, but because they have right understanding of useful of truthfulness. So they do everything they said as much as they can, but it means only right things, not the wrong things. Example, if someone say I'm gonna kill some person, it's not satya parami. But if you know or you said you will do some right things, example, study dhammas or whatever, right understanding will lead that person to do what they said. But it depends on condition, yes.
I think it depends on accumulations too, like accumulation. Some people, whether they have no understanding or a lot of understanding, may always run late to appointments, yes, or forget details in the diary, whereas some people who have no understanding, very punctual and always do exactly what they say. If they say they're preparing a meal, they're there and can be relied on. So I think one needs to be careful thinking about the conventional situation.
Yes. I don't mean us, but I mean the person who really have strong right understanding, example, Bodhisattva or like Maha Bodhisattva or Savaka Bodhisattva, because it's the nature of them always do what they said because they have firm, really strong right understanding. But for us, I think we don't have strong right understanding to do like that.
And doesn't it also depend on so many conditions? Before Ajahn was sick, many things she said she was going to do, many places she was going to go, many people she was going to, but then everything cancelled because of different factors. So we never know what conditions will bring.
I agree with that.
That's why Jonathan was saying earlier, what's important is that at that moment.
Yes, at that moment. Like
what
thing
chitta is at
is
that
the function of right understanding will leads to.
No, not to worry about what leads to what it leads to, but at that moment what the chitta is.
Otherwise it may be expectation that with more understanding I'll be more punctual, or I'll write this article, I'm gonna write it. But actually accumulations are such that so many different conditions can.
I just think about like very high level of like both Bodhisattva, but I realize that for me I cannot do like that because I don't have that right understanding. But I still respect to the person who can do that. Example, Prabodhisattva or anyone. Because
Mahakasapa says he's going to lead the recital of the teachings at the council, then he will do it. But who knows, he may suddenly be killed by a tiger, anything can happen.
So, what's the real satya para me?
Truthfulness of
the reality now.
Right,
no matter what happened. Otherwise, there's no way or no one or no there to understand the teachings, not self. Because we care so much about oneself.